And welcome back to the Famous Monsters Podcast, your home to everything horror, sci-fi, fantasy, and those times when you'd wait for your parents to go to sleep so you can sneak into the living room and watch those horror flicks at midnight. I am your host, George, the Jack of all trades, and today is a very special episode, and I am very glad to say that we have a special guest with us who has graced the screen of pop culture, film, and television, from blockbuster hits like The Dark Knight, Ant-Man, Blade Runner 2049, to Gotham, The Flash, and MacGyver. And once we break out of this quarantine, we can see him in James Gunn's Suicide Squad sequel and the highly anticipated Dune remake. It's David Desmalchin.
Dude, hi. Hello, fellow monster kids. Hey, George, it's good to hear your voice again, and it's good to be talking to you. It doesn't seem like it's actually been that long, but it feels like a million years because we've been living in some equivalent of like Last Man on Earth is what it feels like. I feel like I'm in a Vincent Price film, and I don't know when it's going to end. It's so crazy. How you been, man?
It's been great. You know, like, while doing a quarantine, obviously, we've been keeping this podcast going, and I think it helps keeps us sane. As much as possible, you know, a lot of us are subscribed to our Shudder accounts and Netflix accounts and just binging all of the horror and goody greatness that we can get our hands on.
Oh my God, Shudder has been a lifesaver. I was surprised actually that Texas Chainsaw wasn't on there. My wife has never seen Texas Chainsaw before. So tonight I was going to, when I finished all of my work this evening, going to sit down with her and do Texas Chainsaw. And I looked today and I was like, oh, it's one of the very few things that are not on Shudder. It's been such a great thing to have during quarantine. And as well as my old collector's edition and then some of the recent years' issues of Famous Monsters.
That's always nice to hear.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I can't believe Famous Monsters is taking a long rest in the crypt for the time being, which is really hard to wrap my head around. But I just have this faith that like every good monster, it's going to rise up from the crypt again soon. And it'll be back in our hands. And until then, I'm really glad you're doing the podcast. It makes me really happy.
Yeah, me too. Like, it was a sad day for us to shut those doors, but I'm so glad that, you know, the owner and publisher has allowed us to keep the social media going and as much as we can, you know, because obviously we have our own other lives we're trying to lead, and you know, we get to do this podcast, so it's, like I said, keeps us going. You know,
that's awesome. That's great. Yeah. And we need to keep talking about monsters and how much we love monsters and monster movies and monster everything. So I'm glad that we can talk about it together because you're one of my favorite monster people.
Thanks. And I feel the same. Like it's something that I don't mean you've been still talking within this whole quarantine and trying to get this together. It's amazing within this happening that you'd figure we all have a lot of time, and we do. But at the same time, it has been busy.
It's really hard for me because I am a parent of two little kids. I've got a 2 and a 6-year-old. So during any free moment, they're never leaving the house, right? Like in the past, it was like you had time that you could carve out for your schedule to be able to do things like interviews or phone meetings, Skype meetings, etc. So now with the kids, all of us in the house around the clock, no one's leaving. You've got that added element of there is no like free moments because they're always running around and they always need something. And then I have a horror film that is getting ready to go whenever this quarantine and shelter in place and all the new ways of living figure out what they are after this isolation lifts. So I'm in meetings about that. I have another couple of TV shows that I created that we're developing and working on. And it's really tricky because you have to schedule people's time with their Zoomability schedules. And then we have the trade paperback for Count Crowley coming out. And I had this entire month booked solid for appearances and horror conventions. And I was going to be all over talking to and spreading the good ghoulish word anywhere I could about it. And now we're in this crazy situation. So what we're doing is, like you and I just have these either through Skype or through different, you know, podcast apps and stuff, interviews all the time. It's great. Like, it's so great because I can feel still connected to people. I did Coast to Coast AM the other night for like a 3-hour show. It was so fun. The guys, you know, from Shockwaves were great and had me on. I just did something with Jinx, who's Bloody Disgusting, and obviously getting to do yours. And then more like regionalized and local shows. The WGN folks have been really cool. I've done two of those. It's really nice, but you're right. Isn't it weird that like the world is shut down, everything is stopped, and yet we're all, time is in this bizarre vortex, and it feels like we still don't have enough time. It's like a good setup for a good horror movie.
Yeah, Yeah, it's so true. Especially since we're all locked in place. Yeah. It's like that. There's that joke you kind of have within comedy and within horror, where it's like, where's the worst place to be in a horror film? The bathroom. You know, and we're kind of like locked in the bathroom right now.
Every one of us in our own individual places locked in the bathrooms. So yeah, man. And I have been able to, when I do have free time, obviously, you know, my wife's not the horror maven that I am. And it's been fun for me to introduce her to some stuff and watch stuff. And then, you know, when I do get a chance to escape, like I was saying, I just jump down the old Shudder rabbit hole. Or I mean, I have stacks of magazines and comic books that I have over the years collected. And it's funny because you think, you know, oh man, I got that awesome Bela Lugosi covered Famous Monsters, or I got this fantastic Tomb of Dracula or Monsters Unleashed or whatever. I haven't gotten a chance to actually read them all over the years. Sometimes I've been grabbing and collecting and picking them up at everywhere from flea markets to comic shops to conventions. And a lot of times just because I want the cover. And then now I've had the time to actually dive in and read so many mags front to back that I never got a chance to do, which has been really fun.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a part of the collector habit, is you acquire all of your accoutrement of nerdery and then it just stacks up. Like I myself am in my home office, and behind me, I got a bunch of boxes that say must read on them of like comic books that I've collected over like the years. It's like, I'm going to
read. Yeah, I'm going to have to start writing that on all of this crap that's piled up. But I have been reading. I've been catching up on a lot. I'm kind of fascinated lately with the life of Anton LaVey, and I've been reading all of his writings and books about him. And I have some projects that I'm working on creatively. So I'm getting to do some cool research on those. I'm reading a book about Nazi fascination with the occult and monsters, a book called Hitler's Ooh. Monsters from Eric Kurlander that's been really cool. Reading some Lovecraft, of course. The Complete Fiction was a gift that a friend gave me a couple of years ago, and I remember not really cracking it open. I mean, I love the book and the design of it, but I thought, oh, I've probably read all of that. And then I opened it the other night and I realized there was so many stories that I had never read. So that's been fun. And organizing my monster toy collection, of course. I'm actually looking at, you gave some really cool stickers, some Famous Monster stickers, and I turned some of them into candles because I didn't have enough places to put the stickers. So I got candles that were the right size, and then I just put my Famous Monster stickers on them. So I've got
that's a awesome cool
one that I'm looking at right now, actually. And it looks like, you know, if somebody was in my office, they'd be like, oh, wow, where'd you get that Famous Monsters candle?
Yeah.
Right, well, it's a DIY.
Famous Monsters Evangelist candles. Yeah. I got to talk to our people about that. Well, you bring up something within our conversation that's very important, which is like we talk about going through reading and comic books and stuff. And you brought up a book that everyone should be talking about, which is Count Crowley, Reluctant Midnight Monster Hunter, which is coming out in trade paperback. And to our disbelief, Diamond is reopening soon and people will be able to get comic books again. New issues of comic books. Now, I actually collected all four issues of the book when it was in single format. It actually sold out at my store that I go to and a couple of other local stores. So I had to buy the fourth issue online through like eBay. But I got to get all four, read through all four of them, was so pumped. At the same time, once I got to that last page, I was like, but wait, there's not a fifth issue coming out? What the hell?
Dark Horse knows how to create the leave people hungry, don't they? No, yeah. And thanks for what you said. I'm so glad that you liked the comic because, you know, I know how much you care about this genre and how much these ideas that are at work in the comic mean to you. So someone like yourself enjoying the comic means a lot to me. And I love it so much. I've never been, you know, I've just never felt this sense of like pride and accomplishment with something that I've created. It's a culmination of a lifetime of being a huge fan of classic horror cinema, as well as horror host culture, as well as drama and comedy that grow out of real human issues and problems. And for me in real life, and we've talked about this before, I struggled and battled and faced and feared and won and lost many, you know, round with both addiction and mental illness. And so, you know, 2 days ago was the 18th sobriety birthday. I've been clean and sober for 18 years, and I've been on a path of mental wellness for that same amount of time. And it's really gratifying to feel like I've found a story that I can write that channels all of my love for classic monsters while at the same time addressing and wrestling with issues of addiction and mental struggle. And so when we did those first four issues, you know, it was such a gift that Dark Horse greenlit them and was so supportive of them and put me with such an amazing team. And, you know, fortunately, like you were saying, a lot of shops sold out of the book around the country. And I know that the warehouse at Dark Horse was completely wiped out, which was great. You know, I mean, it was sad for me because I only actually got a handful of physical copies. I would go to comic shops myself because Dark Horse sent me like five free copies for me. And then I would inevitably give those to my kids, my mom or somebody. And yeah. then I had none for myself. So I was going to comic shop to get them too. And so luckily it did commercially well and it got, you know, a pretty positive response from readers and friends. And we were just getting ready to really like present them my case. I've got this whole story that I'm ready to tell that I want to tell. It's been burning inside of me about like what's going to happen with Jerry and how, you know, Steven the werewolf's interaction with her is going to have this hugely meaningful impact on her life. And don't forget, there are these vampires now that are coming in that are aware of her presence. And you've got the Billitombia, which are the zombies in this world. And there's some other creatures that are coming. So all this conversation I was getting ready to have with Dark Horse. And then the bottom dropped out and the world went on lockdown. And, you know, Diamond closed and comic shops closed. And Dark Horse was just like, we will hopefully talk with you more about Count Crowley down the line. But good news is, yeah, Diamond is reopening soon. Comic shops are obviously struggling around the country. So everyone who's listening, if you do have any extra money laying around, or if you're a comic book collector, or if you're not hurting right now, please do reach out to your local comic shop and figure out if they're doing curbside, if they're doing delivery or drop off, because they need us right now more than ever. And, you know as well as I do that they are just like good horror cinema, the cornerstones of our culture. And they represent such an important part of bringing people together. And it's scary, but I'm optimistic that once books start hitting shelves again, that it sounds like all the comic shops I've talked to are finding ways that they can get books to people in a safe way so that people don't have to actually come into the shop.
Yeah. It's been the case for us over here too, for sure. Like everyone's doing, like you said, the mail side pickup. I've had actually this guy to do with called the Bat Cave, and he's been doing live auctions on his Facebook feed, which I think has been really interesting. It's kind of like having that Zoom chat, but people are actually getting to buy the books and the collectibles that they want still while interacting.
Reach out to him and tell him if he's interested, he could do a live auction and I'll jump on and we could do something with the Crowley trade.
All right. Yeah. I'll let them know.
That would be really fun. I love doing stuff like that. I did two conventions the last two weekends where I got a chance to get Lucas Kettner, who's our genius artist, as you know, with the shirt that you helped print and get sent to me. Lucas did that design, which appeared in our Famous Monsters interview. He's the artist and creator of the look of Count Crowley. And Megan Walker, my editor, and Lauren Affey, our colorist, all of us got together on a couple of different panels for conventions. And it was really, really, really cool. But speaking of, I just got a video. My wife, her birthday was last week, and she wanted a group of our friends to lip sync a Britney Spears song for her. And she cut it together like a music video. And one of the people in the music video was James Gunn, the incredible director and incredible human being. And he was wearing his Count Crowley t-shirt in the picture. And I was like so excited to see it. Yeah, it was really awesome, man. You know, there's four of those t-shirts in existence. And I got one and Lucas got one and James got one. I hope you got one.
I am a part of the four. Yes.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
And those are like LTD. Will never be again. Those are very special, coveted, prized objects. And how cool was it that, James loved it.
I'm so glad. Yeah. I wanted to make it. It's one of those things like we didn't get to communicate too much on it. And I was like, man, I hope it fits. And I hope he likes it.
Oh, man, I love it. I love it. I wear it. I don't wear it too much because it's like it is probably my most treasured shirt, t-shirt that is next to my wedding shirt, which I've kept since I got married. And I don't like to wear it too often because obviously I don't want it to get worn, but I wear it on special occasions and like when I'm doing big interviews. And yeah, it's just Lucas's art is so great. And that design that he did with Jerry reading like an ancient monster hunting text, and then you've got the issue of Famous Monsters like snuck in there. To me, it's like, oh, just my heart sings.
I feel like that shirt encompasses actually what he does with the book, which is really special to me because, like, when you read the book, like, I've read it twice. Actually, 2.5 times, because the half was today to just to revamp things in my head. And like, okay, just to recap this. But like, I went through it twice. And then I started noticing things on the second time around that were in the background. Like, he's really good at hiding little trinkets of things where you're like, oh, that's a little movie poster trying to be like Night of the Living Dead. Or like, oh, well, look at those hidden faces in the shadows. Or it's like, oh, what's that little thing there? Like, all the little nuances of, like, you could tell the geek. Like, I think I saw like a Dungeons and Dragons like manual in the corner at one point.
Kids who are watching, who are watching the Friday Nightmare. It's really the nuance, the detail, the little Easter eggs, every little shape. There's not a wasted line on any of the pages, and he densely fills every frame. He's not one of these comic artists that, you know, just gets the work out of the way. He's somebody that savors and loves the work so much. And so I love writing for him because when I write my scripts, I tend to vacillate between certain panels that I'm describing, which I will describe to a T, like with really specific detail and what I need from it. But at the same time, always trying to leave the door open for him to create, invent, and do whatever he needs to do. And then, you know, certain panels I write with just, in fact, I'd say the majority of the panels that I write with, you know, you get the dialogue, you get some blocking, and then I really try to write the emotional state. So like Steven, who's the werewolf, I tried to write him in a way that you would feel a sense of sympathy and empathy for him, but also that dangerousness that comes from somebody who's got that, like I said, that word, that desperation in his eyes. And I wanted you to feel that as opposed to, you know, a lurching or creeping or evil monster. And with Jerry, there was so many different frames where she might be saying something tough or she might be saying something that demonstrates her independence. But at the same time, I wanted the reader to see the sadness or the fear or the depression in her eyes. And he does that so well. And then at the same time, I wanted the monsters in this world to look and feel and move very much like the classic monsters that we all love, the universal world of monsters, Hammer monsters, definitely some castle, you know, inspiration in there. And I wanted them to look and move and feel very honoring the tradition of classic monsterhood, but at the same time, to have something new, fresh, and exciting that people would feel like, wow. My colorist said something so smart the other day. She wants this book to, and I think we all hope that it does, feel like stuff as you remember it, as opposed to the way that it really is or the way that it really was. There's something almost tinged with the color and shade of memory and fantasy in the world. And Lucas just, he does it so beautifully, man.
Oh, it's very true. Like, you guys as a whole team really, I think, captured exactly the goal you were going for, because I think with issue 2, I remember actually going through the stacks at the shop, and with how it's designed, the cover's designed to look like an old, like, creepy or eerie comic book, you know, or actually specifically, like, I think of like Creepshow kind of books.
Creepshow. Yeah.
Like the circles with the character, like the Crypt Keeper or whatever. And I remember digging through all of them, and every corner looked like it was bent. And I was like, damn, did every corner get messed up in the shop for this issue? Like, I'm a perfectionist when it comes to my comic books. They need to be pristine and bagged and boarded and everything. And if I can't find the perfect book, then I'm hitting the next shop. And then I realized that this was designed to look like it has a wrinkle in it.
Yeah.
Like, there's old cracks, and you go through the issue and you see little things like that where it's like, it feels aged, even though it's on new paper.
So happy. When I saw Lucas's design for the cover of 2, I freaked out. I mean, I have created these Crypt Keeper type characters throughout the comic, and I've got so many more, man. I hope and pray and dream that this comic can go on and on and on, but I've got so many Crypt Keeper characters because I love them getting to open and close different issues, and they always create the best cliffhanger-y kind of endings. But, you know, again, as the writer, all I can do is write out a description of what I think they might feel like, give them a name, give their dialogue a kind of flavor. And then what Lucas creates, it always supersedes and exceeds my dreams in ways that I can't even come to describe. I can't even come close to describing. Like the Sister Sylvia, which is, I think, the end of 2. The end of 2. That full pager, it's so good, man. It's so good. And it's just, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Actually, I have it in my notes. Like, I want to make sure I didn't forget to mention them. of Friar Fear and Sister Sylvia.
Yeah.
As I'm going through each issue, because Friar Fear pops up again in issue 3. And so in issue 4, I'm flipping through the pages and I'm digging through it, waiting to get to the end. And I'm like, who am I going to see at the end of this one? Who's it going to be? Is it going to be Sylvia again? Is it going to be a new character? Am I going to see Dr. Fearless maybe pop up? It's like, who is it? Which we do see him pop up in one of the panels, which I thought was great.
That was such a surprise. I did not expect that. And when I opened issue 4's, the way the process works too is, you know, I write an outline, which includes lots of photo references from things like movies and they're not necessarily like, this is what I want a frame to look like, just more like inspiration for things. So I write this outline out. It's usually 2 or 3 pages, like a script treatment. I send them to Megan Walker, my editor from Dark Horse, and she and I, you know, talk through the outline. And if there's anything missing that she thinks needs to be clarified, et cetera, she'll give me notes. Then we get that finalized. Then I go write the script. And in the script, you're saying how many panels per page and what each panel should entail. And when we got that moment where there are a bunch of locals who are auditioning for the Count Crowley job, I had written in a couple of descriptions, but I knew Lucas would have fun with it. But I did not expect the little surprise Easter egg of Dr. Fearless actually showing up in a frame. So for anybody who's going to go look at the Count Crowley issues 1 through 4, please, as you're looking at issue 4, take a look at at the panel that we're discussing, and you'll see there is this mysterious creature who somewhat resembles a particular character that I've created, who is called Dr. Fearless. And we made some really cool, fun commercials about as if you were watching an old horror host show from the past. It's a character that I created and always wanted to play. One of my dreams is always to have been a horror host, and it's been so cool that Dark Horse has allowed me, when we were coming up with marketing ideas, there's no budget for how to market, you know, these ideas. I mean, Dark Horse is an independent, you know, comic publishing company, and they have a lot of titles and a lot of amazing titles. And so they'll do and help and support in any way they can for me to get the word out about the comics. But they also gave me a lot of freedom to say, hey, man, if you come up with something that would work, just let us know. So I said, well, what if it wouldn't cost us anything to shoot this fake commercial as if it's from a classic creature feature show? We went to my friends at the Bob Baker Marionette Theater in LA, and I said, can I use your cool space to shoot for a couple of hours? They said, sure, come on. And my friend Colin and Kelly Westner from Dark Horse and just a small group of friends, my friend Bongani shot it, and my other friend Kelly did my makeup for Dr. Fearless, and we shot this really fun trailer, which is as if you're opening a creature feature, the Friday night horror show, but really it's an ad for Count Crowley, the comic book. So if you guys are listening, you can look it up. It's on YouTube. It also, like you were saying about, you know, Lucas's Famous Monsters, the art that he did for us, doing that commercial to me felt like the world that I was trying to create with this show. It was just so fun.
Oh, you can tell. Like, I remember talking to you before about this in the interview that we had for the release of the first issue. When I watched that trailer on YouTube, I was like, can we have more of this? Like, I want more of this to happen.
Well, here's the thing, too. It's like, the sky is the limit. The possibilities are endless. I know, obviously, in the midst of coronavirus, it seems like, you know, the sky is falling. But I do believe we're going to get through this. And then people will continue to have a hunger for, you know, new programming and shows and movies and comics, obviously, that deal with monsters and heroes and villains. And my dream is to see Jerry's story brought to television and whatever that word means anymore. I don't even think it's called television. What do we call it? Like,
wait, just streaming?
Streaming, right? I guess. Yeah. But I would love to see that her story could be told, you know, through that medium. And I'm lucky because the person who really discovered my idea for Count Crowley and who I first told about it was Peter Lankoff, who's my boss, the guy who did MacGyver reboot that's on CBS and the Hawaii Five-O and Magnum PI. And he's just like, he's done so many amazing things in television and film and comic books. Actually, he created RIPD, which I don't know if you guys ever read or saw the film, but
underappreciated story for
sure. Very underappreciated. Yeah. And he introduced me to Mike Richardson at Dark Horse, and he put together the whole thing because he was like, you know, he's going to love this. He was like, Dark Horse, Mike Richardson. It blew my mind when he put that all together and introduced me to them, and they wanted to make a comic book. You got it. I mean, It's just, it's still, the last time we talked about this, I told you like what a mind-blowing experience that was.
Yeah, I think you luck out. He gets nostalgia too. I think that's what helps there. You know, like you mentioned all those shows he's helped bring back. None of them have been bad. They've all been amazing.
He gets it.
Because he understands.
Yep. He does. And he knows you got to, if you're going to take something nostalgic, like for me, classic horror hosts and classic horror monsters, you have to bring something new to the table and you have to find a new idea to explore with it. And so for me, it's really fun because in the world of Count Crowley, monsters do live, breathe, and exist around us in hiding, and they're plotting to hurt humanity, take over the world, et cetera, et cetera. At least the bad monsters are. And there are good monsters in the world that I'm writing here too, just like in real life. There's good monsters, there's bad monsters. But I think it's one of the more fun elements of the comic to me is this idea that over generations, the monster's strategy at the behest of their leaders, which are these demon heads, but their strategy is to, they've been spinning basically fake news, fake information into our society over the generations. So we've been given all this fake information. So when they do ultimately attack, people would think if, you know, a vampire came towards you, that you would reach for the nearest stake to stab them in the heart, or you'd reach for a cross to push against their forehead. And all of that is total malarkey. It's BS. Like, it's all fake news. Like, silver bullets won't stop werewolves. A headshot's not going to kill a zombie. There's so much mythology that's been so fun for me to invent, because in this world, all of that stuff is totally fake.
Yeah. And you kind of brought up also this stuff earlier, like the struggles and stuff of what, like what you went through and how you put that into the book. And I think that's what made this book so different for me. Like, it wasn't just another monster hunter. It's like you get a layered story with social struggles, like there's sexuality, substance abuse, acceptance, the family concept. And it wasn't just with Jerry, but the monsters deal with it. You mentioned Steven with a werewolf. And it gets me excited. Like, I can't wait to see what more monsters you get to introduce and what they're going to bring to the table. Not just like their battle with being a monster, but what other personal conflicts are they running into that are human? They're very human conflicts that we all deal with. This person just happens to be a vampire, just happens to be a werewolf. You know, you kind of, this is the best way I could think of it when explaining this book to someone else. It's like, take Elvira and put her into Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But you're taking out all of the teenage drama aspect of it, you know?
Yeah, and thank you for saying that. And I wanted something that was really important to me, too, was as much inspiration as I took from everyone from Vampira to Elvira to Buffy, all obviously influences on me. I wanted Jerry to be a whole new kind of female monster hunting ass kicker, in that her whole like horror host attire is not sexy, at least not in the old school classic way. There's no like,
there's no cleavage popping out.
Yeah, there's no cleavage. There's no belly shots. She's not wearing a short skirt. She's in jeans, combat boots, and this rad cape. It was all part of this idea that I had, and Lucas just nailed it. I mean, he just got it so, so great. I wanted all of those elements, but I wanted her to be just more, I guess, human, for lack of a better term. Like, I wanted her, when people read her, to feel like a sense of kinship with her, and that she's just sloppy. She has the worst days. Sometimes she's going to eventually be as much of a badass as a Vampirella could be, in fact, but like, we just don't know if she's going to be able to beat her own demons, to be able to fight the demons that like she has to.
Yeah.
And I really wanted the notion that Jerry can be a sexual being. She can be this woman who has her own needs and desires, and she's going to have relationships, et cetera. But that being sexy, like, isn't part of her shtick. And that in itself to me is pretty sexy. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think there's something really cool and punk rock about
exactly
doesn't give a shit, and that like she just throws her shit together, and she's can be a sloppy mess, but she can destroy a zombie, which is really, really hot.
Yeah, it's pretty much just like, take it or leave it. This is what it is, and that's that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad that you said punk rock, because that's what I thought of when I saw it. It's like, she is like, to be someone who's into comic books, like at least from our years of growing up, there was something punk rock about it, because it wasn't the cool thing to do. And so her being how she is, like, she's totally against the curve. Like, everyone else is going on the path, and she's just like, well, I'm doing what the hell I want. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have to take that.
She's a little Susie Sue, you know? I've got that vibe that she's got like Susie and the Banshees. You know, I was never the biggest Dylan Dog fan, but I mean, all these things influenced me. And what's interesting, she exists in a world in which the BPRD, like, are in a similar alternate universe that monsters are real. Most humans don't know about it, but there are those appointed people that protect us from evil forces. And sometimes those heroes are just as flawed, which is what I've always loved about, you know, the Mignolaverse and all of that amazing BPRD mythology, was these, you know, really flawed characters, but that were doing really important work.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to connect with a Superman if they're not going through what you're going through.
Yeah. And for anybody out there who's listening who loves horror comics, I also wanted, you know, you to feel how much I love things like Creature Commandos, which I don't know if anybody is familiar with, but that was a team of monsters that were forced into this like military squad that was in Weird War Tales. They kind of had their own offshoot a couple of times that DC put out, but Creature Commandos, definitely some Morbius, some Werewolf by Night, Swamp Thing, all of the eerie, creepy, all of the Tomb of Dracula stuff. I hope for anybody who loves all of that, if you pick up the book, that you can see how much I love it and how much I wanted it to like resonate in this comic.
Well, I can speak firsthand. It definitely did. I'm very curious towards, because like when you get a paperback, sometimes there's extra stuff. Is there some kind of bonus material people can expect to see?
Yes, lots of good bonuses. Lucas did not disappoint. You know, you're inevitably going to have a bunch of cool artwork when you're putting together something like this. So it was really fun for us, because over the time that we've been working on the comic, there are pieces that he made for the comic that never were used, or pieces he made for some other thing that we didn't ever get a chance to publish or put out into the world. And so there was all of that, as well as process pieces, things that he was working on that were part of an idea that we had that didn't fully come to fruition or that didn't make it into the book. And then pieces that he just did because he loves the characters and he loves the book. And so he sometimes works on his own pieces that are just private for himself or just to share with me or our friends and family. So he had this incredible trove of work, and Dark Horse had picked out and selected some of their stuff from just all of the files of Crowley art that's been submitted over the last, you know, couple years with Lucas working on it. But they said to us as they were editing the trade, like, well, do you have some other stuff that you'd like to contribute? And Lucas, he just went to town, man. He pulled out so much cool stuff, and the design of it, the layout of it's very special. And then they gave me an opportunity to write some stuff as well. And I have not read it yet, but I know that my editor also wrote some stuff. So there's a bunch of companionship pieces that go along with issues 1, 2, 3, and 4, which are published in this volume. So I'm really excited for people to get their hands on that. And one other additional bonus, if anyone's listening and wants to pick up the trade, order it now. You can go to darkhorse.com, and then through there, you can figure out either how to find your local comic shop. If you have a local comic shop that you already know and love, please email them and order it through them. I think that just continuing to funnel the business through comic shops would mean a lot to me. So if you have a comic shop near you that you do support, please order Count Crowley Volume 1 trade paperback through them. But when you get it in your hot little monster hands, please do me a favor and either take a picture of the trade with some of your other favorite monster memorabilia, or if you want to do a Jerry cosplay and take a picture of yourself with it, if you just want to throw it in your mom's hands and have her take a picture while she's making peanut butter and jelly, post it online. And the first 50 people that post a picture of themselves or their copy of the trade paperback by itself, I've got these collectible Count Crowley enamel pins that my wife made for me as a gift. And I was trying to think of a cool thank you I could do for all the people who are going to be getting the trade. So I'm going to personally mail out 50 of these to the first 50 of these pictures that I see. So make sure you tag Count Crowley if you do it on Instagram or Twitter, or you use the hashtag Count Crowley, or you tag us somehow. And I'm going to keep track, and then we will figure out how to get you guys these enamel pins. And they're beautiful. It's just Jerry's face and it's black, white, and red. And I'm looking at one right now on my desk, and I will be sending you one, my friend, if I haven't already. Did I send you one yet?
No. I'll take a picture of myself with the books.
All right. Well, you got to take a picture of yourself with the book, but you get one because you're you.
Yay. Yeah, I told my really mom cool. We would meet something someday.
Yeah, I've got mine right next to my Dune trading cards and stickers. I used to collect trading cards when I was a kid. How cool is it that I've got Dune trading cards and stickers and I'm going to be in Dune now? That's really weird, right?
It's so awesome, dude.
Yeah, it's really cool. I can't wait for people to see it. I think Empire just published a new photo yesterday or today, and I saw it, and it's Timothy Chalamet and Josh Brolin, and they're on an ornithopter, like on Arrakis. Like, it just looks so epic, dude. It's going to be so cool. Oh my God.
Well, before I get into, like, I always have like a nice fun question at the end when we do these things, but it would be remiss of me if I didn't ask what it's been like to be in these past two films you've been filming of the Suicide Squad with James Gunn and Doom. Like, I know there's a lot you can't say, but what's the experience been like?
Well, just getting to have my name associated, or just getting to be included in any way, shape, or form, you know, small, microscopically small or not. It's hard to sum up all the emotions that I feel when I think about the fact that I got to be a part of some projects that are part of the things that I love so much. So it's really incredible and miraculous. And especially, like we had talked about earlier in our conversation, you know, the fact that 2 days ago was my 18th sobriety birthday, and that I'm a guy that at a different point in my life was sleeping in a car, was suicidally depressed, was addicted to opiates in a way that I never, ever, ever thought I would be able to get out from underneath. And there was a point in my life where I thought that, you know, the world was definitely better off without me, and that I was, you know, never going to be able to enjoy a single day of living, because without, you know, drugs and alcohol, at a certain point in my life, I was so morbidly depressed that I didn't even want to live. And then miraculously, and I don't use the term miracle lightly, it is very much a miracle. You know, I worked very hard. I definitely did the hard work of going to meetings and getting a sponsor and, you know, reaching out for help, asking for help. Some people that love me and also some complete strangers stepped into my life and helped in different ways. And to think that same guy that, you know, used to wake up in a car feeling like there was no point, now gets a chance to walk on to the set of Denis Villeneuve's vision of Dune, which is just like, just that phrase alone, it like gives me goosebumps and makes me want to pass out. Or the fact that, like, James Gunn, never forget, he published like last summer this post. It was just a bunch of names, and it said, "Don't get attached, the Suicide Squad." And it was a bunch of names, and my name was on there.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And I still was like wrapping my head around, what does this mean? Like, it's very, very hard. But I'm sure everybody who's listening, because you're not listening to the Famous Monsters podcast, if you're not a fan of the world in which we're discussing, you know, you guys, I always dreamed of being a Lon Chaney. I always dreamed of being a Lon Chaney Jr. I always dreamed of being a Boris Karloff or a Bella or you name it, Vincent Price. I really had a special affinity to the makeup actors, but just one of those actors who was introduced to me by my first creature feature host, Cremation Mortem in Kansas City. And then the last 30 plus years that I've spent dedicated to collecting and enjoying comic books, the fact that I get to be a part of those world building experiences in such a cinematic way with some of the best filmmakers of our time and of all time, that's very, very humbling. And it's nothing short of a miracle. And it's awesome. And this is so fun to get to talk about monsters and comics and everything else. But on the serious side, if you are listening and you don't think it's possible and you don't feel like there's a purpose, or you don't think you'll ever be able to get out from underneath the power of drugs, alcohol, depression, mental illness, eating addiction, you name it, there are so many amazing and free resources for you. And people like me out here who believe in you and want you to know that, yes, there are some terrible, dark, scary monsters who will hurt you, who don't want to believe you, who will try to end your life or take your life or convince you that life isn't worth living. But there are also so many good monsters out there. There's so many good people in this world. And if you're listening and you want to find more resources, definitely Google SAMHSA, S-A-M-H-S-A, and you can find a lot of really good resources there.
to bring it to our final question, which is the goofy one.
Dun, dun, dun. Yes, yes.
Growing up, I talk about comic books. I think every kid was always excited when that crossover happened. That most unlikely moment of when, like, Spider-Man met Superman, Superman met Muhammad Ali, X-Men met the Teen Titans, you know, or Kiss meeting Howard the Duck. You know, those were monumental moments in comic books. If you could have a crossover with someone, who would Count Crowley mix it up with? And what would their adventure be?
Dude, I mean, the very first thing that popped in my brain, which is what I'll have to say, is definitely Morbius. Like, I would kill to see, like, a Count Crowley Morbius team up. Although, holy shit, what I wouldn't give to have, like, Count Crowley drop into the BPRD world at some point. Like, that would be so amazing. But yeah, Morbius for sure. Oh, dude. Oh, my God. No one's asked me that question before. And that's such a kick-ass question. Anybody out there wants to make up some cool fan art, let me just tell you how much I would love to see Jerry leaned against a wall and Moon Knight looking out over her from above. How much I'd love to see Jerry punching Werewolf by Night in the face. How much I'd love to see Morbius reaching out to help Jerry, even though she thinks he's a monster. Oh my God, dude, that's such a great question. But yeah, I think Morbius, I just have to go with the one that first popped in my head. It's Morbius.
I like that. I think that answer hits my heart because of the fact the issue of the first appearance of Morbius, Amazing Spider-Man 101, people don't know. That was one of the covers that I had to hunt down within my collection. Like, I'm a huge Spider-Man nut, and that was the one because it was six-armed Spider-Man. Morbius was this badass vampire who was a good guy at the same time. I love that one.
Let's make a commitment. Let's make a commitment. When coronavirus is over, you and I we're both on the West Coast. We will meet up and we'll go see Morbius together when all this shit is over.
Dude, I love it. Yeah, we got to make it happen.
I mean, that was the role I always dreamed of playing, but that's cool. That's fine. Go ahead, Sony. Make your movie. Do your thing. It's all good. Jared gets to be the Joker. He gets to be so many cool roles, but that's fine. That's fine. No, I can't wait, dude. I can't wait. And yeah, someday I'm going to find a way to convince Marvel to let me do a special crossover event with Jerry and Morbius. Whew. Now you got my brain going though, because now I'm thinking like, oh man, we could bring back the Creature Commando, see if I could talk to DC and they would let me like incorporate them into a special one shot, or what if I could talk to McFarlane and see if there's any way that like the Spawnverse,
oh my God,
could,
yeah,
like, somehow tie in Jerry. You had mentioned Howard the Duck. Like, Howard the Duck has the right attitude for a Jerry one shot. I mean, come on, bro. Why you got to do this to me? Now I'm not going to stop thinking about this.
Hey, man, us creators is what we do all the time.
I guess I should talk to Peyton and see if, you know, they've announced that they're getting ready to do another Ant-Man. I should be like, Peyton, I really hope you will find some way to include me in your movie. But if you don't, then can you at least have a cameo from Jerry?
I think both can fit in there some way or another.
Dude, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to want to talk about Crowley and monsters and coronavirus and everybody out there listening. I hope you guys are staying safe and healthy and sane. And yeah, man, thank you so much. It means the world.
Dude, me and you could talk about pet rocks all day. I love talking to you, man.
Well, let's do it again.
Anytime, man. And remember, get that book, all right? It's available now.
Count Crowley, Reluctant Midnight Monster Hunter, Volume 1. Oh.